Welcome to Airspace from the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. I'm Matt.
And I'm Emily. Back in 1965, when the Gemini program was in full force, there was another astronaut ready for launch, Barbie.
Since then, at least half a dozen different versions of Barbie have been astronauts on the moon, in the shuttle, and even following a rover to Mars. And over time, Barbie's goal has evolved into encouraging children to pursue STEM careers.
We're talking about how that evolution has looked and how astronaut Barbie has evolved over the decades. Today on Airspace, presented by Olay. So Matt, one of the jobs that you have at the museum is curating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's start with, even though Barbie is not in your collection, let's start with the history of Barbie at the Air and Space Museum.
Barbie is definitely no stranger to the Air and Space Museum. We have several Barbies in the collection. And back in 1995, the museum actually had a small exhibit of astronaut Barbie and a few other sort of Barbies from the aerospace sector. A pilot, some flight attendants, and some sci-fi Barbies. And it was up in two cases and was up for about 10 weeks.
And so visitors to the museum had opinions. They had feelings about seeing Barbie in the Air and Space Museum, right?
Yeah. So, you know, the comment cards sort of ran the gamut, but they could be split into about three camps. Some folks were glad to see it. Some folks were disappointed that there wasn't more of it or more to it. And others, you know, thought that this was frivolous, sort of a waste of time. Why display these toys?
This feels par for the course for Barbie, right? I feel like Barbie can be a really polarizing toy or maybe even pop culture icon, if I dare say it. On one side, you have the negative issues with body image and beauty standards. And on the other, more positive side, Barbie has an extensive resume full of all kinds of jobs and careers that she's represented. Barbie is also often seen as too feminine or not feminine enough, and people either love to love her or love to hate her.
Yeah, and then fitting Barbie into that larger sort of constellation of toys and games that we have at the museum, these are the ways that people engage with science. So they're a big part of sort of science education, and they have been for a really long time. Everything from chemistry sets and construction toys to Lego, kid-sized telescopes, you know, the list goes on and on. They're really a part of that story of how people touch science in their everyday lives when they're kids. One of the great things about toys, games, popular culture is that there's such a wide variety of things for people to engage with that there's not really a one-size-fits-all solution to like what a STEM toy should look like.
And while toys aren't necessarily a thing you would expect to see in a museum like the Air and Space Museum, it's really important that we have artifacts that engage folks on many different levels, and vintage toys can help draw folks in. And these kinds of toys and these kinds of hands-on activities that can be related back to the toys are often referred to as informal science education.
My name's Dr. Eleanor Armstrong, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher at Stockholm University in Sweden. My pronouns are she and her, and I research informal science education, particularly interested in how we learn about space.
I got the chance to talk to Ellie about how Barbie fits into that story of informal STEM education and toys.
For my PhD, I looked at a number of exhibitions in the UK, and something that struck me in the museums that I was looking at was they often had toys as a way of making exhibitions maybe relevant to the public, or they would contain things that were familiar to members of the visitors who would be there. And it was super interesting to me that very few of these toys were what we might think of as dolls. A lot of them were kind of Lego-based toys or construction toys. They often were about science fiction franchises that we might be familiar with. And this started me thinking about what it would mean to include dolls and more feminine toys.
And if you look at something like Barbie, which has existed for a long time and has been delivering various different STEM and STEM career messages over that time, in a museum setting, Barbie and that history can help to sort of illuminate how ideas about STEM and women in STEM have changed over time.
As Barbies evolved, this is both in the design of astronaut Barbie, right? Her clothes and what her job is, as well as the goals of Mattel, who makes Barbie. And so I think it's really important for us to kind of walk through the sort of evolution of Barbie through time, because it's really closely linked with what's going on in space at the same time. And to help us, we spoke to one of Barbie's designers.
I'm Bill Greening. I'm a principal designer at Barbie on Mattel. I'm also the Barbie brand historian.
So in true form, Barbie is a pioneer. She's been a pioneer for a long time. And when it comes to amplifying STEM careers, Astronaut Barbie is no exception to this rule. But I think what might surprise listeners, certainly surprise me, Matt, I had no idea that Astronaut Barbie is more than 50 years old. She's not new to spaceflight.
No, she's not new at all.
We often like to say Barbie went to the moon before Neil Armstrong did. The history of Barbie's first journey into space started in 1965. There was a Barbie fashion called Miss Astronaut, and there was a corresponding Ken fashion called Mr. Astronaut.
I mean, when you look at these Astronaut Barbies, or Miss Astronaut, as they were called, you know, it's a very recognizable sort of 1960s spacesuit. It's sort of this silverish or whitish spacesuit with leather gloves and leather boots and a white helmet.
Spacesuit, we really mean onesie or jumpsuit.
Right, like a flight suit sort of thing.
Like a flight suit. This isn't like a full, I'm going to be out of the spacecraft doing a spacewalk kind of pressurized suit. This is more that sort of silvery, I think of it as Mercury astronaut.
Yeah.
Kind of jumpsuit. And they're really where, you know, Barbie enters the realm of space. And it's right alongside the space craze that's happening at the time.
And, you know, really from like the golden days of Barbie, like from her earliest years, Ruth Handler, who is the creator of Barbie, you know, along with all the great fashions that Barbie is very glamorous and known for, but she also really wanted to show that, you know, girls and children had options, especially as you think of maybe careers that maybe have been typically male dominated, like being an astronaut.
So as we've talked about before on this show, at this time, like in the 1960s, when Miss Astronaut came out, women were, you know, pretty much excluded from the astronaut corps because of the requirements for making it into astronaut training, right? They weren't allowed to pursue those careers that would have taken them through, you know, experimental test pilot training. And there were very few women with engineering degrees as well. So women weren't really participating in human spaceflight as astronauts, but that didn't stop Barbie from putting forward their version of a female astronaut.
Well, and as we've talked about in other episodes, as you alluded to, Matt, it's not just that women weren't qualified, it's that they were systematically kept out of the role of becoming an astronaut. But I think this is what's so powerful about Miss Astronaut coming out in 1965, because we have a toy company who's envisioning an astronaut as a woman at a time when women were not allowed, not that they weren't qualified, that they were not allowed to do this job. And when you consider that the first astronaut class that included women was announced in 1978, Barbie was more than a decade ahead of NASA.
Right. And so, you know, Barbie had gone to space, metaphorically at least, or in people's imaginations, well before an American woman was admitted into the astronaut training program. And once those first women were admitted in the 1970s, Astronaut Barbie sort of went a different route. So whereas the 1965 Miss Astronaut, as we said, looks a lot like a Mercury or Gemini astronaut in a very sort of realistic suit, or a suit that at least nods to what a spacesuit looked like at the time. But in 1985, when Mattel revealed its newest space Barbie, it didn't look like the spacesuits real astronauts were now wearing, but instead had a very, I don't know, purplish and poofy spacesuit that had a sort of white bibbish thing in the front, and then a very unrealistic, sort of more like a 1950s style sci-fi space helmet. So went a completely different direction than the 1965 Barbie.
Barbie's had a few different versions of being an astronaut over the years. I love the 80s astronaut. I don't know if you've seen it. It's very, very 80s.
Oh, I'm looking at the picture right now. It's epic.
It's very kind of like 80s over-the-top fashion, a very fantastical version of an astronaut. And again, I think when you think of what people might have had fascination about what outer space looked like, when you think about television and movies, I think some of that's where you could see the influence of like the 80s version of the astronaut.
Astronaut Barbie of 1985 is so much more sci-fi looking than sci-fact, right? 1965 Barbie is very sort of on point with what you would expect an astronaut to be wearing. But what I love about the 1985 Barbie is that I feel like it gives the opportunity for kids to sort of see maybe another perspective, that you don't have to conform to this one particular vision of what an astronaut is, that maybe you could see yourself as an astronaut if astronauts got to dress like Astronaut Barbie in 1985 in a purple jumpsuit that transforms from day to night by going from a very beautiful puff sleeve magenta spangly jumpsuit into a really lovely miniskirt.
Yeah, perfect for getting right out of your space capsule and hopping on over to the disco for the evening, as they say in the commercial.
Yeah, and you know, this fantastic outfit, you know, I'm sure there's somebody out there who spent a lot of time criticizing it, and I can see why maybe they would feel that way about it. But I do really love the opportunity for kids to really look at Barbie and identify with a Barbie of a particular era, because everybody's different and everybody latches onto different kinds of role models. And in 1985, when Mattel came out with this Barbie, their commercial that was sort of promoting this doll said, "We girls can be anything like Barbie."
We girls can do anything like Barbie.
Astronaut Barbie.
We can be the first in outer space. Fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, giving credit where credit is due, this may be sort of the frilliest version of Astronaut Barbie, but it's also the first Astronaut Barbie that came in the sort of traditional blonde, blue-eyed, white Barbie that we know so well, but also in Black Astronaut Barbie. And from then on, there were at least two versions of the doll every time a new Astronaut Barbie was released.
So while the 1980s astronaut was really kind of starting to push the boundaries of what astronauts do and what astronauts look like or can look like, after the 1980s wardrobe of Astronaut Barbie, things kind of turned back to being much more realistic and much more in line with things that are going on in space at the time. So starting in 1994, which is the next iteration of Astronaut Barbie, there's almost no pink involved, except for the box. The box is very pink. The jumpsuit that Astronaut Barbie is wearing in 1994 is very reminiscent of Apollo astronaut suits, which is right in time for the 25th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing.
So there were good reasons for why she looked like an Apollo astronaut. But at the same time, even though she's headed more in that realistic direction, it's kind of a retro version of what an astronaut looks like. Astronaut Barbie of 1994 is not looking a lot like the astronauts of her own era, with the blue jumpsuits that were worn on shuttle and then also on the International Space Station. So she's ventured kind of back in time, but at the same time towards a more realistic version of what an astronaut looks like.
I mean, who doesn't love a little revisionist history? Wouldn't we have loved to have a woman astronaut on the Apollo program putting boots on the moon? I mean, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
So we see 1994 being the time in which we're getting Astronaut Barbie looking an awful lot like a throwback to the Apollo era by marking the Apollo anniversary. In real life, though, astronauts at the time are wearing these bluer jumpsuits, as you mentioned, Matt. And you actually see those kind of modern representations of astronaut uniforms in a lot of the supplemental educational materials that Mattel is producing at the time. And this is where I think we kind of go back to a lot of the work that Ellie's been doing in informal education and how Mattel has been playing a role in that, because it's not just the production of dolls. It's about engaging these dolls in all of these other kinds of materials that help kids to kind of re-engage their imagination in how they can play with these dolls and be encouraged in these kinds of careers.
Yeah, it's the Barbie extended universe, if you will.
The Barbie extended universe. Well, and I love it because there's a Barbie and Friends book club where kids can subscribe and actually get books about Barbie being an astronaut and experiencing what that life and what that career is like.
Yeah. And also during this period, you know, there's a little bit of a dual branded or cross promotional Space Camp Barbie, where we actually see, you know, Barbie in that sort of more up to date astronaut garb.
Yeah, and doing things that are really engaging, I think, to kids, right? Like when kids look at an astronaut, like that's a really aspirational thing. But Space Camp Barbie, that's Barbie engaging in an activity that a kid could actually go do, right? That's not a thing you have to wait to be an adult and go to adult space camp. There's Kid Space Camp, and we've talked about it on the podcast before. It's a really great opportunity for kids to engage with this career path and really get a sense of what it takes to become involved in space science. And so Space Camp Barbie is a really cool way of kind of meshing these two things together.
Yeah. And Barbie, in addition to going to space camp, she's also gone to Mars. So like 2 years before Mark Watney went to Mars in The Martian, Barbie went to Mars as sort of part of a special promotion surrounding the launch of the Curiosity rover. And again, Barbie kind of went back towards the sort of fanciful pinkish uniform. But, you know, nonetheless, she went to Mars to go explore.
Well, and I love this opportunity that Mattel takes to kind of reinvent what Barbie might look like as an astronaut on Mars, because certainly we haven't put humans on Mars yet. So why not reinvent what that spacesuit might look like and use that as an opportunity, again, to engage kids who maybe haven't thought about this as anything other than kind of unobtainable. Why not come up with ways in which you can engage kids in this career? And so I love the 2013 sort of Mars edition of Barbie, because there's this pretty realistic looking spacesuit, with the exception of the fact that it's detailed in pink rather than being detailed in your traditional red, white, and blue colors that you typically expect astronauts to be wearing.
You know, because it's always like, you know, leading girls to, like, I think big and dream big. And I think the fascination with space travel is just, I don't know, like I grew up in the age when Star Wars was released. And I think the fascination with, you know, traveling to the moon or another planet is very real. And it seems, I think to kids too, it seems very tangible, like in their lifetime, like, you know, someone might walk on Mars for the first time. I think that feels very real in this day and age.
But I think this marks a really interesting moment where it's no longer about the first woman astronaut doing a thing. It's about, you know, really the astronaut corps diversifying in many ways, not just in gender identity. And I think at the same time, Mattel is doing this cool thing where they're like, hey, going to space as an astronaut is not the only way you can engage in the space sciences. There are all these other kinds of careers. And you see this in 2019 when they released their astrophysicist Barbie, who's got a star chart and her own telescope as an accessory that comes along with the doll. And there's this really awesome, like, kind of celestial printed top to kind of, you know, go along with it. And that's not unrealistic. I'm wearing my NASA shirt with my space shuttle on it today because it's part of my t-shirt collection. So space nerds like to rock out in their space stuff. And so I think astrophysicist Barbie really nails it.
Yeah, no, I really love, you know, when scientists make interesting sort of sartorial decisions about their clothes. That is definitely an outfit I could imagine one of our astronomy educators wearing at some point, you know, and I wouldn't be opposed to wearing something similar myself. But it does really go along with one of the messages that we try to convey at the museum, right? Which is that, like you said, there are all of these different careers that either lead to supporting human spaceflight, working in, you know, NASA in other ways, or working in space science, making discoveries using the instruments that are orbiting in space or the instruments that are, you know, in observatories here down on Earth. But, you know, just this myriad of different careers and different paths that one can take that get you involved in space.
I think we've often looked at what Barbie hasn't done as a career yet. And we also we're always looking for those moments for a brand first. Like, we didn't have a astrophysicist Barbie before 2019. So, you know, that was like the first time Barbie added that career to her very long resume of careers.
So one of the most recent iterations of astronaut Barbie's from 2022, and she's got this classic bubble helmet with kind of white detailing. And then she's wearing a jumpsuit that's detailed in red, white, and blues. That's maybe a little bit more of a realistic take on what astronauts wear, although she does come with some little tiny packs of astronaut ice cream. And it's this iteration of Barbie that went to the International Space Station. So two of these dolls went to the International Space Station. They went up and they came back down and they now live within the museum's collection.
So we mentioned that, you know, in addition to astronaut Barbie, Mattel has also produced Barbies in different other space and STEM related careers. And they've also produced Barbie dolls that represent real astronauts and real aerospace rock stars that have gotten sort of the full Barbie treatment. So, for example, Barbie launched a line of dolls based on real historical women that includes Sally Ride and Katherine Johnson. Sally Ride, the first American woman in space, and Katherine Johnson, who most people now know thanks to the book and the movie Hidden Figures, contributed to the success of the early human spaceflight program. And Emily, you have a Barbie that's in the mail on its way to you. Who is that again?
Oh my gosh, she's coming today. I'm really excited. Her name is Samantha Cristoforetti, and she is a European Space Agency astronaut. She's the first Italian woman to fly to space. She works for ESA, not NASA, to be clear. While everybody goes to the International Space Station, they don't all necessarily come from the same space agency. But there was a collaboration between Samantha and Mattel made a Barbie in the representation of Samantha Cristoforetti, who's not necessarily who you would expect to be sort of Barbified or to get the Barbie treatment. But I think it's really important to amplify different kinds of people in the space program that young kids aren't necessarily going to come across unless they're already like really engaged in niche content.
And, you know, becoming a sort of a Barbified version of herself isn't the first sort of Barbie moment, I guess, for Samantha Cristoforetti. While she was on the International Space Station, she actually did a number of interviews with a Barbie influencer. Yes, Barbie influencers exist.
What is your favorite thing to do in space?
My favorite thing is floating, be weightless. I can even do flips, look.
And through that, and through the Barbie Dream Gap commercial, has, you know, influenced children and girls around the world.
Hey, Elena, I have heard you want to be an astronaut when you grow up. Is that true?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. It's the coolest job in the world.
Yeah, so we already mentioned that in the 1980s when the new Astronaut Barbie came out, Mattel's new slogan was, "You can be anything like Barbie." The Dream Gap project, Matt, that you mentioned is sort of the new iteration of this, so it's sort of new version of this, to really focus on keeping young girls and kids from losing this sort of belief that they can dream really big.
Let's talk about the Dream Gap.
What's that?
It's the gap that comes between girls and their full potential.
You see, starting at age 5,
girls stop believing they can be presidents,
scientists,
astronauts,
big thinkers,
engineers,
CEOs,
and the list goes on.
So there's research that shows that young girls start to feel really limited by what they can achieve at a really early age. And there's evidence to show that seeing women who do these kinds of big jobs in real life and these really cool things that are traditionally in male-dominated fields can really help mitigate some of the internalized limitations that young kids put on themselves. So this part of Barbie, using the toys as a connection with real people or real science lessons, is a goal of the Barbie Dream Gap project.
You know, when we look at our career line, I do hope it inspires children, like, oh, like that might really trigger a child's imagination, like, and maybe that will lead them down to an interest of astronomy or, you know, thinking about working in that field specifically.
So it's wonderful to think that having an astronaut Barbie to play with could actually encourage a young girl to keep space science, you know, on her mind as a career path that she might follow as she gets older. So at the end of the day, Barbie's not just an idea. It's not just a historically significant object. It's also a product. It's a toy that adults tend to buy for children and that children then play with in whatever way they choose. But, you know, all of that relies on Barbie first being purchased, being taken off the shelf and brought home.
Something that I always think about with toys is these are rarely being bought by kids. And that toys function in a 21st century consumerist society on two levels. They function as playthings for children and they function as things that adults buy. And so I actually hadn't thought about this idea of whether kind of being able to demonstrate a career through clothing and the objects is specifically tied to toys that are branded as feminine as opposed to boys' toys. But one thing this does make me think is that perhaps this is done in a way to encourage people to buy them as gifts or for their children because they are recognizably part of a career.
There's also some cueing for both children and adults to try and entice them to purchase these toys. And these are things that might be fun or encourage kids to want that particular Barbie. And some of these things might be an animal companion, which you wouldn't necessarily expect an astronaut to have in real life, or fun accessories like the 2022 Barbie who has astronaut ice cream. But there's a lot of elements that go into how this design process happens.
I think there's certain things that kids perceive as like, this is what we associate with an astronaut. And I think the designers could take those cues that we know we need a spacesuit, we know we need some, you know, moon boots, we know we need a helmet. Like, those are the key things. And then, you know, sometimes I think there is some creative liberty to want to make sure that the doll is, you know, appealing to girls and to children, that it's still kind of toyetic and fun to play with. So there is a fine line sometimes.
So it's not a negative quality. There's always going to be an element of marketing or consumerism that goes along with toys, whether they're intended to encourage kids to pursue STEM education and careers or not.
I'm really interested in finding people who played with these Barbies as children. So if you're listening to this podcast and maybe you had some of these dolls when you were younger, or you have bought them for people in your life, I would be really interested in knowing like whether these objects encourage you to play with them in a particular way, or if one is perfectly able to play astronauts with a Barbie that doesn't come with a fancy suit and a space helmet. And if people did that or remember doing that or see children doing that in their lives. But I do think that perhaps this touches into this two levels of toys where they're in, and perhaps is more aligned with what people are buying rather than what children are doing.
It is the adults, of course, who have most of the purchasing power in most families. So adults do make a lot of the decisions about what toys come home. Although, you know, at least in my household, there was a lot of lobbying on the part of the kids who are watching Saturday morning cartoons and seeing all the advertisements for the toys, for what toys we want to see come home from the store. And a lot of us who grew up watching those cartoons, buying those toys, playing with Barbie, playing with Lego, whatever it happens to be, we're all adults now. And speaking about Barbie for adults, in just a few short weeks, we're going to know if Astronaut Barbie actually makes it into the Greta Gerwig Barbie movie. And we've seen the sort of trailer for that movie, the teaser, which draws pretty heavily from, you know, that very famous scene at the beginning of 2001, A Space Odyssey. So who knows, maybe there will be a space theme. Or at any rate, you know, whoever made that trailer was a big Kubrick fan, I guess we can assume. So we have high hopes for the Barbie movie, I guess we're saying. Emily, what are we going to go see it?
If it's in IMAX. But yeah, actually, Matt, we should make plans.
Yeah.
Airspace is from the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. It's produced by Katie Moyer and Jennifer Weingart. Mixed by Tarek Fuda. Additional help from Amy Stamm and Sophia Soto Sugar. And for more fun content, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Airspace Pod. Airspace is presented by Olay and distributed by PRX.